Hey friends, I'm Scott and it's Azure Friday. I'm talking with Sean McKenna about the open service broker for Azure.
That's right. Now,
I've been doing some stuff with Kubernetes recently. I've been building Kubernetes clusters at my house.
Yep.
Sounds like this is something for me, but also for other systems.
Yeah, exactly. So a little bit of history. The service broker grew out of the Cloud Foundry platform. Mm-hmm. So it's been there for a number of years. And the idea is basically, you've got this multi-cloud, multi-platform world along with a bunch of service providers, right? So service providers like us in Azure providing a bunch of data backing services. So imagine I'm a developer, I'm building some stateless application in a platform like Cloud Foundry or Kubernetes or OpenShift or any number of platforms. It makes it really easy for me to build my stateless applications, but I still need somewhere to persist that data behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. We see a lot of demos where someone like fires up WordPress, but they kind of yada, yada, yada
right.
over the data
yeah,
part.
Yeah, don't ask any questions about how exactly we're going to persist that and manage it. And so the idea of the service broker is to provide within those platforms a marketplace of those backing services that I can really easily connect my applications to and use those to persist my state.
From a developer's perspective, does that marketplace look like a marketplace, or does it just look like a series of other possible charts that I could go and plug into my app?
It does sort of look like a marketplace from a command line marketplace sort of thing, right? So I'm in my command line, and we'll see that in a second. I see a bunch of services that I have available to me. We've got a bunch that we've built out in the open service broker for Azure today. We'll be adding a whole bunch more. It does kind of look like a marketplace. So the idea is to make it easy for me to not only provision those services, so say I need an Azure database for MySQL, but also get back the necessary connection details to be able to connect to that, right? Because that's another challenge that developers have is I go provision some service in Azure or somewhere else. Okay, now I've, in the portal or whatever, I see that I've got the username, password. How do I actually get that back into my application, right? And all too often we see that like hard-coded or put into source code that's in clear text. So the service broker provides a secure way to inject all of that information directly into my application so I can just pull it from an environment variable.
And there's more than just that. If I work for a big IT company and we're working on a big project and it's like, oh shoot, I need some Redis.
Yep.
I got to go into Azure or wherever. Right. I have to figure out what subscription am I supposed to use?
Yep.
Do I have the appropriate permissions?
Yep.
There's a lot of administrivia.
Right.
I just need a Redis instance.
Exactly. So the idea of like filing a ticket and waiting for a couple of days while my IT department provisions that and somehow through that Byzantine set of layers gets me back just the credentials to be able to connect to that thing.
Well, it's kind of anathema to the cool stuff that we see on Cloud Foundry and on Kubernetes, which is, boom, I'm deploying an app that is multi-layered and multi-pods.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So this abstracts that appropriately
yep.
so that it is a marketplace, but it's a marketplace I don't need to worry about subscriptions and connection strings.
Right. That's all taken care of for me by whoever's operating that environment that I'm running in, and I as a developer can just kind of go and build applications.
Cool.
So if you want to take a look at it?
Yeah, let's see a demo.
Okay. So since this started with Cloud Foundry, we'll start with a Cloud Foundry demo, and then we'll do a Kubernetes demo. And this is all the same code running in both places. So it's an open source project.
Service broker isn't the service broker for Kubernetes or for Cloud Foundry.
Right,
it's
exactly.
The open service broker.
Exactly. And that's the idea of the open service broker APIs. It's actually a working group that Microsoft participates, but alongside IBM, Pivotal, Red Hat, SAP, Google, a whole bunch of companies are partnering on defining what this API looks like so that we can make it easy for developers running in all kinds of environments to connect to all kinds of different backing services.
Cool.
All right, so we're here in the terminal, and like I said, we'll start with Cloud Foundry. So if I do CF Marketplace, I'll get back the list of services that have been made available in my environment. And so here we'll see a bunch of these Azure services that have been made available by virtue of that, the open service broker.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see for each of them, there is a set of plans. So you have the idea of this service type and then a set of plans, which you can think of as sort of the SKUs or whatever the different tiers are for that specific service.
Right.
And those are defined by the broker. So what I'll do is I'm going to use, you mentioned Redis, so let's take a look at Redis. So I can do CF Marketplace dash S and pull up the details for the Redis cache service, and you'll see there basic, standard, premium. You get a little description, and unfortunately, you still have to pay for those services.
Someone downstream, right?
Exactly.
Would that be another point that the IT people, the DevOps people who manage that, are handling those kinds of things, right? The developer just gets what they want.
Yeah, exactly. So you can imagine This system that, you know, this marketplace that I'm seeing here has been set up for me by my cluster operator, IT department, whoever's in charge of setting up that environment for me. Mm-hmm. And now as a developer can just go in and kind of see what's available to me and provision it. And so they can decide what they want to lock down, which types of services, which specific plans might be available to me as a developer in a particular organization within my enterprise. And so the IT department gets to have that control, but the developer gets to, you know, very easily provision services.
Okay.
So now that we've seen what we have in terms of Redis, let's go ahead and create a service. So I'll do cf create service, Redis cache, cache, give it the plan, so I'll use the cheapest one, and let's just call it my service.
Right there, you're creating one called My Service. Is there any kind of way to connect to an existing one if someone else on my team might want to?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, that's what I'm going to do right now because it takes a couple minutes for a new service to spin up. So we'll connect to an existing service
that I've
already provisioned. So if I do CF services, I'll see the set of services that are provisioned here. So I've already got this demo Redis service provisioned, and it's already up and running. And then the one that we just created is still spinning up. So what this is doing behind the scenes, obviously, is turning around and calling the Azure Resource Manager for the Redis cache to provision that service.
Right.
And then it's just doing a sync operation to make sure that its state is up to date with as that happens.
But talking to create service, that is a open service broker thing, and talking to Azure is an implementation detail.
Exactly, yeah. So it's the service broker that, in this case, is running in my Cloud Foundry environment. We'll see it running in Kubernetes in a second, that's doing that translation.
Right, and you've been typing CF, which is Cloud Foundry's command line.
Yep.
And Cloud Foundry doesn't know anything about Azure, and it shouldn't.
Right, exactly.
Yep. Very cool.
So let's go ahead and bind to that existing service. So I've got this Cloud Foundry manifest here, and it just lists that it's going to bind to this demo Redis service. And so when I cf push, which is the command to push an application in Cloud Foundry, it's going to do all the Cloud Foundry things in terms of building out that application. But the interesting thing that we're going to watch for is there's going to be a specific line item in the output here, binding service. So right here, you see that it's binding this application, so CF Redis demo, to this service that I had created. And what that binding step means is basically the service broker, by virtue of having provisioned that service, is getting back the endpoint and the username and the credentials, or I guess in Redis cache, it's the keys to be able to talk to it. And it's storing that securely in the service broker's state store, which in fact is itself running in Azure Redis, and then injecting that information into the application via an environment variable. So we can see that if I do cf end.
Because at no point here have you thought about connection strings.
Right, exactly. So if I pull up the environment variables that have been that are present for that application, you'll see here this Azure Redis cache with the credentials and the port and whatever information I need for that specific service to be able to connect. And so as an application developer, I'm just picking that up from an environment variable.
Yeah, when we looked at the YAML just looked like it was just a thing that was out there in the air.
Yep, exactly. So here's my application up and running. Pretty sweet UI, if I do say so myself.
Pretty bootstrapped.
And I can, because it's Redis, store and get back key value pairs. There you go. So that's stored.
That's real.
That's real. That's in Azure Redis. So now, as a developer, I don't need to care about all of that state management piece and how the Redis cache is going to get backed up and all the operational greatness that comes from using Azure services. I can just go focus on maybe making my UI a little bit better and adding features to my application.
Okay, so that's Cloud Foundry. Let's say I work in the same company in a different organization that uses Kubernetes.
Yeah, exactly. So same project, same source code in terms of the service broker, but now running in the Kubernetes environment. And one of the things that we've done that we're announcing this week is, so there's this notion of the Kubernetes service catalog, mm-hmm. which is actually providing sort of that plug-in architecture that comes in the box with Cloud Foundry. Yeah. It's sort of an add-on to the core Kubernetes platform. That's, again, a kind of multi-company working group. The user experience for that we've found a little bit challenging working with the kubectl CLI. It's because it's kind of this add-on to Kubernetes, is a little bit challenging to use. Mm-hmm. So we've released another open source project, which is the Service Catalog CLI.
Okay.
And so we're putting this out in the community. We think it's an easier way to interact with the Kubernetes Service Catalog. And so if I do svcat get classes, you can see that same list of services that we saw in Cloud Foundry. That's coming because it's coming from the same broker. Mm-hmm. And I can do the same kind of idea. Again, this is meant to be more idiomatic of a Kubernetes environment. So I do service cat describe class.
So this is an alternative, because I've typed kube control describe, et cetera. This is an alternative to kube control that maybe the community will adopt, maybe it won't.
Yep.
It makes it easy to work with this marketplace.
Yep. And if you're trying to do this with kube control today, it's very challenging. There's a lot of sort of custom parameters you need to pass in. And sure. So the service catalog CLI just wraps that. And so in this case, we're going to look at the Azure database for MySQL. You can see the same kind of experience here where I pull up the details of that service, and I can see a set of plans that are available to me. The cool thing that we do with Kubernetes is actually integrated with Helm.
Okay.
So Helm, the package manager for Kubernetes,
right.
You can just have those services provisioned by a Helm chart. And so the example I'm going to show is WordPress, which most people are familiar with. And WordPress, of course, needs a MySQL database as its storage for the posts.
Right, and right? If you want it to be more than a Hello World demo, you're not just going to fire up two containers where one is a database that's stateless.
Yep.
You really want to have MySQL as a service.
Right, exactly. And so if you go look at the upstream Helm chart for WordPress, it does exactly that. It spins up a container that has MySQL in it, which again works for demos, but to deploy that in a real production environment, there's a whole bunch more things you need to go think about in terms of how you're going to persist and back up and make that database highly available.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea here is I can actually just use MySQL as the Azure service. So here's the one of the templates within the Helm chart. So we've taken those upstream Helm charts and sort of adapted them to be open service broker for Azure compatible. And so you see here just within the within this template within the Helm chart that I am specifying that I want an Azure MySQL database and specifically using this standard 800 plan. And so what's going to happen now is when I go and deploy that Helm chart, it's going to use the open service broker for Azure to provision that MySQL database behind the scenes and then provide those details similar to what we saw in Cloud Foundry. So if I do Helm install, let's call it Azure Friday WordPress. Put it in a namespace.
You're creating, but you can also, you know, not just build up, but tear down, utilize existing ones.
Yep, exactly. So we talked about sort of the provision and bind steps of the service broker. There's corresponding deprovision or unprovision and unbind that happen alongside that. So that Helm chart is now installing, and you'll notice here this service instance. So it's going ahead and creating that MySQL database in Azure and then creating a service binding. So again, same idea to what we saw in Cloud Foundry where it's creating that instance in the cloud provider and then getting the necessary connection details back in. It's actually stored as a Kubernetes secret and then injected into the application by an environment variable.
And Kubernetes and Cloud Foundries and things like it, they have always understood that there are external services. And this is a way for Azure to enlist in that experience,
yeah, so,
like anything
so
else.
That's sort of the heritage of the service broker. Again, Cloud Foundry had this notion kind of from day one, or at least for several years.
Sure.
And Kubernetes has kind of looked for something similar. And so they saw that in the Cloud Foundry ecosystem and said, hey, why don't we just adopt that? And this is kind of the great thing about open source.
Yeah,
it's all
it
this kind of cross-pollination, right? Like, let's not go create something new. Let's partner on bringing this same type of functionality to other platforms. And so now, if I go ahead and jump over to the Kubernetes dashboard here, again, that MySQL database is going to take a little bit of time to spin up. So we'll just look at one that I deployed a little bit earlier. So you'll see here for the WordPress pod, it has a bunch of environment variables.
Yeah, all the WordPress stuff that you
would need. All the WordPress stuff.
Yeah.
And here is the host, which is, as you can see, running in Azure. The port that I need to connect to, database name, database user, so all the information that I need to for WordPress to be able to connect to that MySQL database is injected here securely as an environment variable. And the application doesn't need to change to be able to talk to this, you know, Azure MySQL database versus talking to the container, which is great. And so just to prove that that works, I can go ahead and open this WordPress site, and let's go to admin page.
Yep, look at that.
There it is. And shall we do create a post? The only way we really know that it's persisting is if we...
But that's real, though. That's really persistent. That pod could come and go. That pod can scale. And now you've got a production backend in the form of MySQL as a service rather than just a throwaway container with MySQL in it.
Yep, exactly.
So when can I use the Open Service Broker?
So it's available today in preview. And it is, it's just a GitHub project that we'll provide the link to. So you can go ahead and grab that project and deploy it. We've got instructions for deploying it to Cloud Foundry or to Kubernetes. We'll be adding instructions shortly for Red Hat OpenShift as well. Mm-hmm. And so you just run it as a container that runs inside your environment and register with the appropriate platform. All that's included in the instructions. And then you can go ahead and take advantage of those services.
And it's open source, and people can get involved, file issues, and maybe even do a pull request.
Absolutely, yeah. So we, as I showed before, we've got a set of services. We've got 10 or 11 services available today. Mm-hmm. Our intention is to basically add all of the Azure services eventually. And so we would love to have folks help contribute to add more services and also add more Helm charts. So take some of those upstream Helm charts that are available just for running with containers backing those services and convert them to supporting Azure backing services through the broker.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right. I am learning all about the Open Service Broker for Azure here on Azure Friday.